You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1. Registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor, or 2. Solely investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor. Integrated Partners and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
WTCM News Talk 580 on a Thursday. Welcome aboard. It's Thursday, the first day of spring, March 20th. Time for New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design. Mr. Dennis Prout, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Ron. It's great to be here. I think, you know, we need to do some group mouth exercises. Okay. They're vocal.
Round and round the rugged rock ran the ragged rascal.
That's pretty good. I don't think I can say
very
that.
Very good, indeed.
She sells seashells down by the seashore.
Excellent. Who can do that?
Peter Piper picked a pack of pickled peppers.
She sells seashells by the seashore.
Seashore,
yeah. Well, it's great to be here. If you do have a question of a financial nature, please call us or write. And that number, if you would, is, Ron, please.
Tis 947-0023. That is a 231 area code. You can phone us or text us at 947-0023.
And you probably heard her already, Heidi Cartwright. Good morning, Heidi.
Good morning. Happy spring to everybody out there. Doesn't it look like spring? What a surprise this morning when you
really
open up the drapes and, oh, yeah, it snowed a little bit, didn't it?
A little bit. I was shoveling outside of the office, and you say, why were you doing that? Well, because it needed it. Thank you. I was laughing. I couldn't believe how heavy it was. I don't ever remember experiencing snow that heavy.
Heavy wet snow.
Ever.
Yeah.
Heavy. Heidi is our own RICP and managing director. It's just us two here this morning, so two against one, Ron.
Okay.
Let's have at
I'm
it,
ready.
Shall we? We have lots of great information. Really excited because Heidi's going to be talking about Social Security, the five golden nuggets of Social Security, according to Ms. Heather Schreiber of the Social Security Advisor, which we get through Ed Slott, Social Security Advisor. I'm glad you have your notes because mine are somewhere back at the office. So, well, good luck with that one.
Say she sells Social Security down by the seashore.
There you go.
Speaking of that, we're going to have Bob Simpson in on 410, April 10th. April 10th, Bob Simpson will be with us, a now retired Social Security managing director,
of the Northern Michigan area.
A ton of Social Security information we're looking to catch up with him on. So this next part is the economy. It's the economy, stupid, or not so stupid is the name of what we're talking about. Investing is hard, and this is from Rob Powers, our own economist in residence, and not so much in residence. Crystal balls are nice, but the future is complex and uncertain. So one's conviction must be tempered by the fact that the better part of wisdom is knowing what you don't know. And Charles Munger would agree with that statement. That made me think of him. 99 brilliant Charlie Munger quotes that explain why Warren Buffett trusted him so much. 23. Acknowledging what you don't know is the dawning of wisdom. Acknowledging what you don't know. I'm sorry, I don't know enough about that. He mentioned Meta as a reason he said, I don't understand the company, so I'm not going to buy it. It was as simple as that. Furthermore, sentiment can overwhelm everything, negativity and or too much positivity related to the stock market and especially this top seven stocks. You know, we wondered how far can they go to the sky? Well, we found out this year that they can't. and that they're respectively down as a part of the S&P 500. Significant. It is hard to forecast future fundamentals. Just look up GOOG if you want to see the impact. Google.
Yeah.
And your quote there, Ron, if you want to see what happens to those kinds of companies. It is hard to forecast future fundamentals, but anticipating fluctuations in sentiment, even harder. Finally, extremes matter. The psychology embedded in financial markets causes prices to traverse, a word near and dear to my heart, I'm not sure why, to traverse both periods of unbridled optimism and deep pessimism. When you think it's the end of the world, it's probably not. Thank you. And leaning against these excesses is where the probability of investment success is the greatest. So if you can go against the wind, what a great song by Bob Seger
with the Eagles backing up.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Ron, all things. Jeez. So it's incredible where you can make those conscious decisions. As Charles Munger also said, buying great companies at fair prices, at a fair price. Some would say some of those top seven companies may be in that price range right now. Right now. So how do you do that? How do you do that, you ask? Well, the fact that you might be saving monthly in perhaps a growth fund through your 401k. Maybe one of the better areas for you to pursue right now, given their recent correction downward in price. Just look at that particular growth stock fund within your 401k. Exciting stuff, I know. You mean
making
I have to look
Roth
up the price?
Contributions. That's what I think of when the market goes down.
See? Another fountain of knowledge. It's crazy. So given that you would make contributions or add monies right now, it doesn't mean that you have to come in with a large lump sum. It just means if you can to be methodical. And as long as your risk tolerance goes along with it and all the rest and all the compliance areas are covered that I may have missed. You know what I'm saying? So given that reality, maybe consider putting some money into those kinds of companies.
Buy low.
Buy lower than the previous price just a short 2 months ago.
But if you're a hands-off person, you have an IRA, 401k, whatever, you have fund managers that make all those decisions.
They do indeed.
And the market, like Google or the big seven, you said, have dipped in price. Right now, those fund managers are probably snatching up at that low price right now?
Could be. Probably not at max pessimism. The average decline, just because you asked, on the S&P 500... since 1928, is 13.8%. And we are down how much, class?
S&P?
Yeah.
Since when?
Well, from its high to about 3 days ago, 10%. Marked. That's a marked decline. Is that a word? Can we use that right now? Let me look at that up here briefly. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 8.
What is he doing?
9.
I'm not sure what 10. The countdown's for, but.
Marked. Here it is, Miriam. Having an identifying mark.
Yeah, marked.
Having a distinctive or emphasized character. Merriam-Webster. Thank you very much.
So the S&P's down 10% from its high. You said the average since 1928, or no, the
average decline.
Decline.
Since 1928. I went way ahead in my notes, and now I'm lost. Surprise. No, I'm kidding. So there have been 33 corrections over the last 97 years, longer than most of us have been alive, Ron.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And their average decline was 13.8%. They lasted an average of 116 days from peak to trough.
Okay.
The farmers out there will appreciate that. We could be one of those 10 percenters right now, says Rob. Research indicates that only 10% of them end up as bear markets. A bear market is a 20% decline. It doesn't mean that we won't. It just means that we're certainly, we can say this, we're getting closer to a buy territory. We could. We're not at max pessimism right now. We're not. Because you still have
does that mean
all the
we
Trump
can become,
voters are still relatively positive.
Does that mean we can become more, we have capacity to become more depressed? Is that?
Yes, we always have that capacity. You know, that means that Moomers is open and we may have to do something about it.
Hello. Joe Biden used to hang out there. But the Fed,
I saw that, yes.
The Fed came out yesterday. They projected lower growth, maybe a little uptick in unemployment, and possible little uptick in inflation, just because they're not sure. But that kind of sets a low bar to exceed. So, what happens in the next 6 months if they're wrong and the numbers are better than that?
Well, already inflation is coming down given the price of eggs, and I check those on a daily basis. But
wow.
Teasing. But they are coming down, and so is oil and gas. So because I wouldn't say the floodgates are opening up, but a lot of opportunities are opening up in terms of production as well as capacity for both production here as well as exportation of those same things, given LNG, I think it's called.
Somebody said you call it a correction. They might be referring to the Dow here, but it said on the text line, you say correction. I say a drop in excess of 2,000 points is a crash. So would that be the Dow maybe that was down that much?
Yeah, he's talking about the Dow.
But that would be...
That's about a less than a 5% correction.
Yeah, so you look at the percentage, right?
Yeah. I don't know that there's a definition of what a crash is.
Yeah.
It's probably you driving by one and not being in it is a correction. When you are in it, it's a crash. Depends on how much you've lost. It's the reality of the individual situation. The S&P 10% S&P 500 decline is the fastest 10% since COVID. And that was when?
2020.
Yeah, excellent. Excellent. Ron says, I don't know how many times we've talked about that. I mean, after all, April of 20.
Do you still have that?
No. Oh, he's looking for the sounder.
Barbara Walters and this
Barbara
is
Wawa.
It's all gone.
In today's world, S&P 500 bear markets defined as declines of 20% or more. So, you know, that's that table there shows that the when you get to 10% territory, that tends to be an indicator of a buying opportunity, because the average rates of return from those points can be relatively significant. Where is that page?
I thought it was rather encouraging when you stated that research indicates that only 10% of those corrections end up as bear markets. 10%. So that's 90% of the time it doesn't happen. So I think that can be taken positively.
Here it is, the averages. The average rate of return, whether if you're in a recession, the average rate of return, rather, is about zero in 12 months. If you don't go into recession, the average rate of return about 11% on the S&P 500 with a 10% correction. So if you know that we're not going to have a recession, then you should invest. Just as simple as that.
Yeah, that's thrown around a lot, though, by especially in the news media. It's like, there could be a recession. We're not far from a recession. What happens if we have a recession? And a recession is when people refer to it. It has an official definition, right?
It does.
But sometimes a general definition, too, right?
Yeah. From my recollection, it's 2 quarters of declining GDP, gross domestic
consistent
product.
In a row.
2 quarters, right, in a row, which for most people would mean 6 months. Okay.
There we go. 2 quarters, 6 months.
It's always about
money. We're having way too much fun here. Okay, financial guy.
What came first?
That chicken or inflation? I say the egg came first. After all, that's what we're always talking about, isn't it? Apparently, egg prices are down, so chicken or inflation? That's a great question. Aye, aye, aye. There's an investment lesson to draw from these experiences. You know, we're here, okay? Think about this. Okay, Dennis, I'm thinking. Given that you are thinking, some of your best moments and time can be from taking time to think about it. What can I do with what's going on? How can I make a difference? Do I need to schedule a meeting with Prout? See what I'm saying?
Have you had a lot of clients call and say, what's going on? We need to come in and talk this over.
Have we had anyone?
Nope.
I've had people call with concerns, but yeah. Also it is a common theme when we have our review meetings, you know, we talk about the current market environment and people do express concerns. But I think I hear in my meetings a lot of optimism that although it may be volatile in the near term, people are very hopeful that we're going to turn things around in the long term. Yeah. That because things are changing, it's going to be up and down.
Instability, or unpredictability. But like the Fed also said yesterday, things are solid. Employment is good. The outlook with fewer regulations and tax extension is good for business. But they just don't know the future. So that's one of their concerns.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think a lot of us...
The major economic indicators look relatively positive. They really do.
Yeah, and I think tariffs is more of a new thing that people aren't sure of how it's going to affect things. So we don't have as much experience with these dramatic shifts in tariffs, so we don't know what the outcome is going to be. Right. So.
Even Maria Bartiromo is kind of flummoxed by that one.
Flummoxed.
In the early 90s, broad market ETFs first became available, enabling investors to cheaply and easily trade into and out of stock markets as frequently as they wanted. Thus ended the 200-day moving average tactic of saying, if it goes down below that point, we can just blow into the S&P 500 and make a bunch of money. Well, that kind of went away. What this next point is an investment lesson to draw from experiences related to portfolios. Profitable trading strategies don't work forever. So thinking about this, being methodical about your investment decisions, and sticking with a strategy may wind up being your very best tactic. And if your portfolio is automatically rebalanced, which ours are to a large extent, then you tend to profit from these kinds of opportunities. It's like watching real estate. Real estate's a great example. If you pull up, most homes today, their prices compared to even a year ago are down somewhat. Not significantly, but they're down somewhat. Well, guess what? So are interest rates. Mortgage rates are declining steadily now. The average 30-year about 6.75, the 15-year at 6.25. Given that reality, we'll probably see the beginnings of more buyers coming into the markets. There are certainly more sellers at this point. We're getting more supply. And that has been a long time in coming. So sometimes these things don't change dramatically and or overnight. So keeping an eye on things may be one of the best things you can do. So what would we do with the S&P 500 probability model buy signal? That's where we're somewhat at, is what Rob is saying. Try to catch the falling knife with some of the investment money or what? And he talks about then growth investments being a possible opportunity because of their significant decline. One of the common arguments for avoiding any of the Mag 7 stocks, Google, Meta, Nvidia, those companies, is that it is too late. I'm sorry, it's too late. That they are too popular and are over-owned. Shown below is a table which lists at five-year intervals the 10 largest companies in the S&P 500. And then I'm thinking, we could have taken the whole show on this. I mean, this is some great stuff.
Yeah, but they can't see the table,
No, but
Dennis.
They can, I know.
You might have to list them.
These are the 10 most over-owned stocks at that point in time. The data indicates that companies can stay in the top 10 for a very long time. IBM, a great example, top 10 in 1990. Having been on the list back to the 60s. Exxon was in the top 10 from 1980 until 2015. 25 years. GE was the biggest stock in the world for many years before faltering in 2008. Some even remember that. Microsoft first made an appearance in 1995 and has been in or near the top 10 ever since. 30 years. Not bad. However, there's some turnover in the top 10, with about four new entrants over every 5 years. So every 5 years, about four new entrants. Of the 500 companies that were in the S&P 500 at its inception in 1957, 53 remain in the index today, or about 10%. Mm-hmm. Back in 2000, GE, Exxon, Pfizer, Citigroup, Cisco, Walmart, Microsoft, AIG, Merck, and Intel were in the top 10.
When was it, 2000?
2000. Now, Apple, Microsoft, NVIDIA, Amazon, Google, Facebook, Berkshire Hathaway. Berkshire Hathaway finally makes it in there. Hmm. Broadcom, Eli Lilly, and J.P. Morgan Chase.
One text I do want to get.
Sure.
Because this person writes, I recently heard on a news broadcast that seniors had to either go to socialsecurity.com to prove you're a real person, or go to a Social Security agency to provide that you really are proved you're a real person to get your benefits. Is this what you have to do to still get your Social Security? No, that just sounds mm-hmm. like
that's an internet meme.
I don't think they could even manage that.
Can you imagine the line out the door?
Yeah,
please. Yeah.
That just sounds like bad stuff there.
Right.
Suppose you're collecting Social Security. You have been for 5-10 years. Mm-hmm. Do you now have to prove to the Social Security Administration that, yes, I am a person, I exist, by going online or going to an office? The news reports are unclear. There is something to that, though.
Yeah, here's the detail.
Yeah.
Those who cannot use an online identity-proving tool will soon need to visit a local Social Security office in person to prove their identity, the Social Security Administration said on Tuesday. Over the next 2 weeks, SSA will carefully transition to stronger identity proofing procedures for both benefit claims and direct deposit changes, a statement said. Individuals seeking those services who cannot use their personal My Social Security account, which requires online identity proofing, will then need to visit a local Social Security office to prove their identity in person, it continued.
All right, so you're talking about millions of people, many of them elderly, maybe not hip to internet and computers and finding their accounts, have 2 weeks to go online and figure out how to type in, yes, I exist? That seems
I'm not sure that's what that's saying.
It said you have to verify online, right?
Who cannot use an online identity proving tool will soon need to visit in person to prove their identity. SSA will carefully transition to stronger identity proofing procedures for both benefit claims and direct deposit changes.
So this is
benefit claims, where you're starting a benefit or where you're doing direct deposit changes. That's all that's saying, I think.
But, there hasn't even been an announcement. If there has been, it's escaped me.
Yeah.
It seems like a rather large order to manage, let alone to get the word out.
Yeah, here's a further explanation. Individuals seeking these services, benefit claims, which is a new,
to start
new
up
collection,
here
and direct deposit changes, which will then need to visit a local Social Security office to prove their identity in person. Yeah, that's what I already read. So it appears to me if you're new collecting benefits or requesting direct deposit and you can't directly prove your identity online, you'll have to do that in person, which to me makes sense.
Changing your direct deposit.
If you're changing direct deposit.
If you're already getting it, it doesn't sound like.
Or starting a new claim and you can't. For whatever reason, you can't prove it online, their identity proofing software, then you need to go in and see them.
Seems like you'd have to do that anyway if you're making a change.
I know.
You'd have to do something like
that. Yeah, they'd want to make sure it's you.
That's really scary stuff, though, because people hear something or they get an email about something, and it's like, just don't give out your Social Security number.
Yeah. Right. What's Whatever scary is what can happen if you go too far down that road in terms of the scam artist. And you know, if you're uncertain, go to the local office. That's what I think.
Yeah.
You know, if you need something done and you're not getting it done online, obviously you need to go and visit the local Social Security office.
We might be able
office.
To ask Bob that.
That's what I was thinking.
He'll be in April 10th.
April 10th, which is a short, 3 weeks away or whatever. Mm-hmm. Not that far. Heidi's got some great info here on, look at Social Security. Imagine that.
How about that?
Yep. Go for it, Heidi, please.
Yeah, so this comes to us through our Ed Slot group, the newsletter Social Security Advisor by Heather Schreiber. And in this article, it says there's 5 golden nuggets, warnings and winning moves. So when it comes to claiming Social Security and navigating Medicare, there is far more than meets the eye. Hidden within the fine print are quirky rules and unexpected twists that can significantly impact a client's retirement income and health care costs. So we're going to go over the 5 that she mentions and describes. So the first one is the entire month rule. And this is for people who want to start their Social Security benefit as soon as they turn 62. To be eligible for benefits in the month that an individual turns age 62, a retiree must be 62 years old for the entire month, which might be difficult for someone like me that's in the middle of the month. I wouldn't be able to do that. Social Security applies English common law to determine when a person reaches a specific age.
English, meaning, hang on a second. English common law.
Yeah. That started back in the Middle Ages, didn't it?
Yeah. How does that compare to uncommon law? I just want to know that. Okay. Sorry. Go ahead, Heidi.
When a person reaches a specific age, meaning someone is legally considered to turn a given age on the day before their birthday. For example, a baby born on January 23rd of 2025 is considered to turn 1 year old on January 22nd of 2026. When this principle is applied to Social Security, retirement benefits, only individuals born on the first or the second day of the month are considered age 62 for the entire month and therefore eligible for benefits in the same month.
I think we need to have a quiz on that question.
First or second, but not the third. If you're born on the
That's
third.
That's right. No. Okay. You're out of luck if you're born on the third or after that.
Okay.
So you have to wait another month
to get your benefits.
Okay. So, That's the first quirky rule.
Keep in mind, you may have been born on the wrong day, so you may have to wait an extra month for your first month's benefit, right?
So if you're, you could go a lot of places with that. So let's talk about the second quirky rule. It's called rest in peace. Social Security does not pay benefits for the month in which a beneficiary dies, even if the death occurs on the very last day of the month. Under Section 202 of the Social Security Act, benefits are only payable through the month before death. Since Social Security benefits are paid in arrears, the payment received in any given month covers the previous month's benefit. For example, the payment received in March represents February's benefits. If the Social Security Administration is not notified of the death in time to stop the next scheduled payment, any overpaid benefits must be returned. So if the payment for the month of death is deposited into the account, the spouse should not spend the money and should work directly with the bank to return the payment to the Social Security Administration.
I think we need to play the song from Elvis, Return to Sender, Address Unknown. I'm sorry, I tried to return and I just couldn't do it. I had no idea where to send it. You know, I can see
That just sounded like
I'm sorry. Well, I sent it. The mail didn't deliver it.
Millions of people And you get a check from the government, you go, well, they must be right. So good.
So people should be aware that sometimes the SSA will automatically withdraw the overpayment once they are notified of the death. So you might have not initiated that repayment yet. They might go in and take that. So when you're dealing with all those expenses, when someone has passed away, you just want to be aware that that could happen.
There may be some give backs going on in terms of Social Security benefits. You know, if you died on the 25th and you got your benefit on the next month, then I'm sorry, the money is not yours.
Yeah.
All right.
You're going to have to give them a check back.
Okay, so here's the next nugget. Okay, we're on nugget number three here. Okay, when free money is not free.
I would have written a check, but I was dead.
That's a good excuse. Okay. For seniors who file after...
I just don't recognize that signature. Sorry, Eddie.
That's all right. Okay, so we're talking now about when free money is not free.
Yes,
right. For seniors who file after their full retirement age, Social Security offers the option to receive a lump sum payment covering up to 6 months of retroactive benefits, but no earlier than the month they reach full retirement age. When the lump sum can be that lump sum can be very tempting, seniors should understand what the impact is of this choice. Because the official start date is backdated, if you accept this lump sum, these retroactive benefits permanently reduce the monthly benefit, forfeiting up to 6 months of delayed retirement credits or a 4% higher lifelong monthly income benefit.
What happens if you get the lump sum payment and die?
Well, then that might have been the right choice.
So it doesn't matter.
Well, it depends on when you die.
Nope, he's dead.
Sorry. So the lower monthly benefit affects a person's retirement income and the dollar amount of future cost of living adjustments, or COLA. It could also result in a lower survivor benefit for a spouse who may eventually rely on that income. So there are a lot of dominoes that can fall by taking that lump sum. In some circumstances, retroactive benefits may be appropriate. If you need it for immediate cash flow or you have a significantly shortened life expectancy, but proceed with caution. Accepting retroactive benefits could have tax implications because if you get that big lump sum, more of your benefit may be taxed. As with all Social Security claiming decisions, the choice is between short-term cash flow and long-term income security.
Well, that could be a really nice thing because obviously, you know, if your benefit, let's say, was an average of $2,500 at that point and you got a 6 month back payment, $15,000, you know, it's really that may be a nice payment for the fact that you decided to wait. And if you know that your life expectancy may be shorter than what you were previously thinking, or you're not concerned about that lower benefit over lifetime for whatever reason, that could be a nice benefit to consider. So this is for anyone basically now over the age of 67. 67 is pretty much now
the full retirement age.
For myself, I think it's 66 and 10 months, something like that. So,
but just think before you take advantage of that because you could be affecting other things that you didn't realize.
Correct.
For the full retirement, as an example, say your full retirement age is 67.
Yes.
What if you retire at 66 and a half months? Mm-hmm. You're considered 66, right? Between 66 and 67, your benefit doesn't go up at all, like monthly or anything?
It does.
It's just year to year.
No.
It goes up every month.
Every month.
You wait.
That you wait.
Every
goes
month
up,
that you wait.
If that's your question. So what is your question again, Ron?
All right, if you're waiting for full retirement, and let's say it's 67.
Okay.
And you say, well, 67, next year I'm going to retire at 67, get my full payment.
Right.
Then you decide, you know what, I'm 66 and a half now. That's close enough. Will your benefit be, how much different would it be than 67? Will it be the same as it was when you turned 66? Or does it go up from the time you're 66 to 66 in 6 months?
It does go up.
It does go up
every month.
Okay.
Every month, yes. that a small increment goes, and then it's added up to 8% per year.
Okay.
So
it'd be 1/12 of 8% each month that you wait. So
amazingly, I understand that.
Excellent.
So be ready for that question.
Okay.
From Social Security when you claim benefits. Yeah. All right. Nugget number four: under withholding. If you under withhold today, that may lead to regret tomorrow. Individuals who receive Social Security benefits should be aware that while withholding federal income tax from Social Security benefits is voluntary, it may be a smart move for many retirees, particularly those who do not withhold enough from other sources of taxable income or have an irregular cash flow. So this is something that we always talk about when we're dealing with IRA distributions withholding, but you can take withholding on your Social Security benefits, but it's not required.
It can help you establish discipline. If you're saying, well, you know, I'm not sure how much I need withheld, an easy thing to do may be to have withheld, for instance, 20% from your Social Security payment, even though 20% of your Social Security income is not taxed at that rate. Because it's consistent, it's coming in every month, it's a great way to possibly have that discipline going on where you can say, or that it's a consistency, if you will. I'm sure most accountants would appreciate that answer as well. Go ahead, Heidi.
Yes. So the IRS expects taxpayers to pay their taxes as income is earned or received through a withholding or quarterly estimated tax payments. When taxpayers withholding and estimated payments fall short, they may owe an underpayment penalty if they did not cover at least 90% of their current year's tax liability or 100% of their prior year's tax liability. So this safe harbor threshold is especially important for retirees whose income sources and tax situations fluctuate yearly. To avoid this situation, recipients can request withholding directly from their Social Security benefits, and you can do that through the IRS form W-4V, which is voluntary withholding request. So you can set percentages at 7%, 10, 12, or 22% of a monthly benefit. And those are those choices. Especially, I think, in our world, Dennis, we deal with that's like when people do Roth conversions, because that does upset that flow of money through the year. And thinking about having that withholding is going to help it from affect the taxes too much and having to pay estimates the next year.
Good point.
Can we run through a few texts? Oh, are you? I thought you hit number five there.
Well, I have another one, but
let's do the text. Yeah.
Let's do a few comments and questions. But someone said, I stopped into the Traverse City office, Social Security, I believe, and they gave me a printout on the month-to-month amount Social Security would pay me. It's a great planning tool.
Nice.
There
you can
go.
Do that to
good
your local
to
office.
Yeah.
The person who originally asked if they would have to self-identify to Social Security says, all the government rules boggles my mind. I agree.
It can be mind-boggling.
In listening to the birthdays on the 1st or 2nd, someone wants to know, does that also apply to taking Social Security on your 70th birthday, say on the 1st of May? Does it start in May?
Well, I would say from this article, it indicates that the way they determine age is the age you are the day before your birthday. You know, you're considered to be that age.
If you turn 70 on the 1st or 2nd of the month,
then that month.
You're 70 for that whole month.
Right.
If you turn 70 on the 3rd.
You're not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would do the same.
I'm sorry, you're just not.
I recently received a letter from the IRS. My first thought was, yikes. It was a tax statement showing interest paid $210 for the calendar year 2024. I don't remember receiving $210 from the IRS. Can you enlighten me?
I'm looking at the next comment. Sorry. Recently, from the IRS, my first thought was, yikes. It was a tax statement showing interest paid $210 for calendar year 24. I don't remember receiving $210 from the IRS.
So the IRS says that the person received $210 in interest?
For calendar year. It doesn't indicate there that it's from the IRS. I'm
maybe they didn't claim it. ask the CPA. I would yeah. you ask your
I would ask your
preparer.
Tax professional, and also look at any returns that you received from the IRS in terms of refunds. They may well have paid interest and you just didn't notice it on the statement. Mm. That could well be the case. Sometimes when you get that check, it just the interest amount is in small font,
small
if you will, small print. And so you may not have noticed it.
My wife and I are doing well enough financially to not start drawing Social Security at 62. My question is it better to draw at 62 and invest all of it or wait until the higher age, full retirement? We are both retired now.
It's going to depend on several factors. At first, how long do you intend to live? What is your life expectancy? Do you have a longer life expectancy? Generally, if that's the case, it's better to wait, especially if you don't need the funds. Part of it is depending on whether your spouse would draw from your amount as well. Perhaps it could be a better strategy for one of you draw and the other to not, depending on how each other will depend on the other's benefit if you pass away. Okay, are we following there? So yeah. I've waited, let's say, all the way to age 70. In that case, I pass away. Hopefully my wife would collect my benefit if I die early versus her own. If that's not the case, she'd collect on her own anyway, then I may want to take mine some earlier. Mm. Because the break-even point is about 8 to 10 years. When we run these in the financial plan universe, it's about an 8 to 10-year break-even point. But if your age life expectancy is longer than that, the differences can be dramatic if you live longer than that. And Social Security payments continue at their current pace.
And how many other sources of guaranteed income do you have? I mean, it depends. Do you have pensions? Do you have annuities? Those sort of
yes.
things.
And truly, would you invest it if you were to receive it? That would be the next argument. Social Security guarantees about an 8% return for each year that you wait. Pretty tough to get that in today's world, okay?
All right, before our final break, we have a quick phone call on
sure.
the line from Traverse City. Tom, good morning, Tom.
Morning. Hey, quick question. If my retirement date is 66 in 10 months, if that falls in, like, my birthday plus 10 months is the middle of September, would I have to wait for October to get credit for the full 66 in 10 months?
Yes, I would say that is correct. You should wait until October in that case if you're a September birthday.
I would agree with that.
How early do you need to let them know what your plans are for it to be applied?
2 to 3 months.
Yep, that's usually what
is.
I see,
yeah.
2 to 3 months
mm-hmm.
about.
Let Social Security know you want to file in 2 or 3 months. Give them
correct.
The date. Okay.
Yep.
I'll just read one quick text. It's just a statement. Give you an idea of the gentleman or person says, I'm 62, February 3rd. My first Social Security check should be here April 9th, just to give somebody an idea. Second Wednesday of the month.
Beautiful.
So 2 months from then. All right.
Great.
All right. ProutFinancialDesign.com. Dennis Prout, Heidi Cartwright, thank you.
Appreciate
thank
it,
Thank you very much, Ron.